I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Hold on to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of that young Superman show. Then we're from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by Mr. Matthew Rocco. What's up, Matthew?
Hey, Zach. Thanks so much for having me back on.
For sure. I call you Matthew. I call you Rocco. We have a lot of Matts, you know, so it's hard to keep track of everybody. So
I'll take it. I'll take Matthew. I'll take Rocco. Matteo, if you want to go Italian, it's all good.
All right. Well, I would say, what's your guess that you are probably one of the biggest fans of Lionel Luther? Is that correct?
I think that you've guessed incredibly correctly. Yes, Lionel is one of the big draws for me of the entire show of Smallville, to be sure.
And you have quite a Lionel look going, by the way. You know?
If only everyone could see the wild mane right now going on.
If you cosplayed as Lionel Luther at a convention, many people would stop and get their picture with you, I guarantee it.
I actually told my buddy that the other day because he's a big Smallville fan, and he said the Smallville cast were going to be showing up somewhere, and I was like, dude, he's got the red jacket. I was like, dude, you be Clark, I'll wear a business suit, and that's all I need to do, and I'm Lionel.
Just a purple tie is really all you need, and people will get it.
That's it.
but hey, we're talking about Mercy this week, and this is like the biggest Lionel episode of the series, I'd say, because he's really the protagonist. And this is, I can't think of another episode where it's so Lionel centric, where we pretty much start and end with him. It's just like if a day in the life of Lionel, right? This episode.
That's probably why it's like one of my favorite, maybe my favorite of season five for sure, because Lionel as protagonist of the story of the whole episode is one of the. It's just so surreal, right? Like you're so used to him popping in and out and just being the villain and then just laying waste to whoever he's in the scene with and then disappearing and, you know, and then they have to deal with whatever he's done. But with this, it's like you have to deal with what he's done with him the whole time and he has to deal with it. That's why it's really interesting. I think the perspective shift.
It's really interesting because you assume they said to themselves, oh, you know what? Let's do a Lionel episode, right? Because in these ensemble casts and ensemble shows, it's like, all right, we got to have some Clark episodes, some Lex episodes, some Lana episodes, give Chloe a couple episodes in there. Let's give Martha or Jonathan an episode. And then, oh, yeah, Lionel, let's give him an episode.
Yeah.
You think that's how they came up with this, but absolutely not. That could not be farther from the truth. Because in Smallville, the official companion season 5 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, the writer of this episode, Stephen S. DeKnight, had this to say about the conception of this episode. Quote, originally, Mercy was a lizard boy episode. We went round and round trying to break this lizard boy story, and we realized we couldn't come anywhere close to creating a lizard boy episode because he kept becoming Dr. Connors from Spider-Man, which is bizarre to me. Like, when has that ever stopped them? The second villain of this show is Spider-Man. So I don't know why they're like, oh no, that's been done before. We can't do that, right?
And also, they're like, we can't do the villain from Spider-Man. We'll just do the villain from Saw.
Yeah, this is the biggest rip-off episode. Although, I will say, I mean, this episode is Saw. Who are we kidding? But this is probably my favorite movie plot of an episode.
Same.
Because these situations, like, they're not... Saw does not own the copyright on someone in a death trap, right? I mean, like, although this is... Remember, this is early mid-2000s. Saw was in the public consciousness back then. They lean into it heavily. And they go on to say, coming up with the episode, quote, so we went back to one idea that the writers Turi Meyer and Al Siptine had. Someone is on death row and their loved one on the outside kidnaps Martha to force the release of this person who's about to be executed, trying to get like a pardon from the state of Kansas. And if this person was executed, they would execute Martha. that became more of a combination of the movie Saw and The Defiant Ones, where we wanted to throw together Martha and Lionel. Then we started fixating on Lionel, and we thought, well, this is a great showcase for Lionel. Somebody is going to make Lionel pay for all the bad things he did. So it's funny that to see that the journey they took from the initial concept to the actual episode, because that's completely backwards from what I would have thought it was.
It's so weird because I haven't read the season five companion in like a while. Like, you know, I have all the companions and I love like going back and rereading little trivia things about the making of, and it's always really fun for me to go back and check that stuff out. But I haven't read that one in a while, and that I remember when I did read that, I was so like, what? Lizard Boy? This, it's a totally, totally different episode completely. And it's so interesting how they arrived at that. But like, thank God that they went in a totally different route than that, right? And they went to a much more character-centric episode with it.
Right, because season five has been pretty great so far. At the time when the show was on, like, I thought season five was the best season. Like, oh, man, it's the best season yet. And it really still is one of my favorites, and it's really strong first half. You know, in the middle, as Smallville tends to do, they're like, well, it's past February sweeps, but the finale's not coming yet, so we got some filler. Like, the last couple episodes had some great moments in them, like Fragile and Void, but they felt a lot like season one episodes, where it's like this crazy use of kryptonite or some stock freak of the week with a random X-Men's ability, which, you know, again, they're like, we can't do the Lizard, but we can do every other X-Men. We're going to do that. So it's just fun to think that they were above copying other superheroes' powers. Coming here, I'm like, yes, we're back on track, I felt like, because there are things I really liked about, you know, the last few episodes, and the things I, you know, didn't like so much about a lot of other ones too, but here we are back in high-tier Smallville, and there's actually one deleted scene from this episode, and it would have, just by necessity, it would have started the episode, and it is Lionel making a sandwich on the Kent farm in the kitchen. Clark comes in, and Lionel's, like, making a sandwich. He's like, what are you doing here? And Lionel says, oh, I'm helping your mother. She's stressed about the speech she's giving at the fundraiser, and I just thought I'd make her some lunch. And Clark's like,
oh my gosh, like, this is coming back to me. I totally forgot about this. This is
like, yeah, it's on the DVDs. We'll post it on the social media as we do. And Clark says, I never pinned you for the domestic type. And Lionel says, well, we all have sides that we keep secret, Clark. You know? Clark's like, well, some people are exactly what they seem to be. And Lionel's like, all right, well, I'll leave. And then so he leaves, and then I assume they just would have cut to him driving down the road. That explains where he's driving to in his car. An interesting scene, a good back and forth. The only scene that Clark and Lionel share in the episode before Clark's secret is revealed. But I'm glad they took it out because, like we were talking about at the very top, it frames this episode as a Lionel episode. Like, we start with him in the car, on a business call, reading the newspaper, that kind of thing. So I'm glad they took it out. It's a fun little deleted scene. But for the overall structure of the story and the framing of the story, we don't need to see that because Clark complains to Chloe later about Lionel hanging around all the time. That communicates all you really need to know.
You already get it without needing the scene. But it's a fun like deleted one to look back at. That's so weird though, because like it just makes me realize how many like obviously Smallville is always in my collective DNA, like my brain, you know, my conscious, but it makes me realize how many of those little moments or like the deleted scenes and stuff is probably floating around in my subconscious. Like, I literally wrote a scene that's almost exactly like that in a movie I was making, and now I'm like, that's where I got that from. It's a Lionel thing.
Well, that does it for our deleted scenes and pregames. Let's get into it. Mercy.
Hello again, Lionel.
Where am I?
In a hell of your own making.
Who are you?
Just another one of the many faceless people your greed has destroyed.
That narrows it down some, doesn't it?
You may not know me, Lionel, but I know you. You're a man above it all, commanding your workers to carry the burden of your empire. They toil while you profit.
It's called running a business. That's how it works!
Not anymore.
Mercy is the 19th episode of Smallville's fifth season. It aired on April 20th, 2006. It was written by Stephen S. DeKnight and directed by James Marshall. So kind of a Smallville dream team there as far as Stephen S. DeKnight and James Marshall go. I think two of everybody... If everybody could see their favorite episodes like on a chart and see who wrote or directed them, these guys' names would pop up a lot, I think.
Totally. They would be like, right, it would probably be like them right neck and neck with Greg Beeman, right? It would be like.
Yeah. So as we said, the episode starts out with Lionel on the road. He's in a car ride. He's reading the newspaper. We'll take a screenshot of this newspaper. It's about Martha doing some senatorial things. And he's on a business call, and he pretty much ends someone's financial relationship with Luther Corp. By the way, you know, I've always talked about this podcast. What an odd, like, what's the deal with Lionel and Lex and Luther Corp and Lex Corp and all that? They actually address it in this episode, you know, some of the back and forth. And I was like, all right, very good, show. Like, that's all I needed, right? Back in, like, season two, I needed, like, two lines like they have here back then, and a lot of my problems would have been solved, but...
I love that. I love that, too, that it gets into, like, the minutia of some of that stuff a little bit, like, which is definitely helpful. And speaking of minutia, I just need to throw this out there. For anyone, this is the only opera song of Lionel's I have not been able to find all of these years. I have no idea what this song is because it's so low in the limo. Like, you really can't even hear the tune that much. And it just, like, it only plays for, like, 30 seconds as he's on the phone. So if anyone's listening and they know that opera tune, post that comment.
Yeah, I was almost expecting the episode to end. Usually when episodes end with Lionel at Luther Corp in his office, there's usually some opera playing, but it was not in this episode. Classic limo hostage situation. After Lionel gets off this business call, right, the little door between the driver and the passenger slides up, and then the car stops, and Lionel can't get out of the car. And then the driver gets out, and there's this video screen that comes on, and it's Jigsaw from Saw. He literally says, you're gonna have to play a little game. I'm like, so obviously we talked about it already, but we have a plus one for movie plot as an episode because this is Saw, like it's less gruesome, and it's interesting. There are some Smallville connections to Saw. Laura Vandervoort was in Saw 8, I believe. I don't think they called it Saw 8 by that point. I think it was like Saw 3D or Saw the Final Cut or something like that.
Was this after Smallville? Oh, after
this was after Smallville, yeah. But then kind of contemporaneous with Smallville, or just a couple years after she was on the show, was Emmanuelle Vargier.
Oh, Helen.
Who
right?
played yeah. Helen Bryce, right? She was in Saw 2. And I've only seen the first two Saws. How many of the Saw movies have you seen?
I saw the first one, and I don't think I saw part two, but I think when the first one came out, it was like, I want to say like Smallville season three time, like early 2000s, 2003 or something. And yeah, I remember being very impressed with just like the whole concept behind what I really enjoyed was like the mix of the gore and the psychology, like the twisted psychology and
right.
the combination. And from what I had heard, and I could be totally wrong, so Saw fans, I apologize if I'm totally wrong, but I heard that the rest of the franchise kind of went more kind of just almost totally in the direction of the gore without the cool psychology of the first one. So I just didn't really feel interested to keep up
right.
with
and,
it, you know.
And that's a side effect of a lot of horror movies. Like, really interesting concepts, right? Like Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween, right? The first one is like, okay, kind of finds a nice balance, and then it completely learn all the wrong lessons, right? And like, oh, well, you guys love blood and death, right? Well, here's all these slashers. And like, no, it's not about that. So yeah, it's hard to find that. And also, hey, who directed Saw? James Wan, director of Aquaman.
That's such a weird connection. That's crazy.
Right? Well, and arguably, you know, and I go back and forth on this all the time. Aquaman, arguably the best of the DCEU, as far as the DCEU proper goes, right? The ones that are in the worlds of DC, whatever they call it, I don't know, but, you know, I really do love Aquaman. So, yeah, James Wan, a very talented, multifaceted director. And Saw, yeah, I do highly recommend the first Saw movie. The second one does get more into the gore, and then, you know, I'm not really about torture porn, as they say, so I really didn't keep up with them after that. But, hey, it's very, I mean, like, what, 8 movies, I think? 9 movies, maybe? So it's a very successful horror franchise. So, anyway, all that to say, this episode is Saw. The game they play, not quite as gruesome as Saw, they play Hangman, right? So there's a little Hangman comes on the screen. Lionel has to guess what the word is because the limo has stopped on a railroad track and it's train's coming his way, right? It's really actually a really tense scene because he's trying to get... I love the juxtaposition of like this childlike game and like imminent death, and I think it's really effective.
Yeah, it was really like rewatching it, I was like, wow, Smallville like really did a great job with the direction like of that whole thing, the suspense of it. And it was great that they could make you feel empathy for Lionel in that scene of all people. And it was
right,
great.
I mean, how far we've come, right? Since season one.
Oh, one question I had rewatching it. This was something I was always a little confused about, and it just came back to me when I was watching it. There's that shot of like the driver's feet, you know, coming out from the limo. So was the assumption that Jigsaw like had a gun to the guy's head and kidnapped him, the driver, and then disappeared somewhere, or like?
Well, first of all, I like that you call him Jigsaw. I'm going to do the same.
What else can we call? We're not going to call him Lincoln Cole. That's not as good as Jigsaw.
Now, my assumption was that he was the driver the whole time, Jigsaw, and he had already kidnapped Alex. All right, who we find out it got burned to a crisp later. My assumption.
So he was the driver, and then it was his feet as he was leaving and recording.
Correct.
The rest
that's
of
why we don't see fate. He leaves kind of calmly. So that's my assumption there. Also, in the exterior shot of the limo, we see a Smallville sign. I'm like, how many of these signs are there? Because that's not where it was before. Why would it be on a train track? That's not a stop. That's not the train. Yeah. So that's a random intersection, right? But it was only there for them to have the "Are you having fun yet?" graffiti on it. Because Lionel, he guessed. He's like, "It's something I learned from you," Jigsaw says. And Lionel's like, "No, no mercy, no mercy." And that's, of course, plus one for episode title set in episode.
Of course, the when I first on Krypton set when they first showed that was going to be the title. Of course, you were probably thinking this too, right? That it would introduce Mercy?
Well, that, or Mercy Graves?
Yeah. Was it just me? I was like, oh, they're introducing Mercy.
Well, there's a lot of ways they could do it, right? Because you have Mercy Graves, who was created for Superman the Animated Series, much in the same way that Harley Quinn was created for Batman the Animated Series. Yes. Lex's right-hand woman. We eventually got a form of Mercy in Tess Mercer, as Smallville does. They kind of remix these characters. Also, the Black Mercy Flower. For the Man Who Has Everything was another possible assumption what they could have done. Plug for the Patreon. Me and Matt Truex actually did a pitch for an episode about the Black Mercy Flower. You can find that on our Gotham Clock Tower level of our Patreon. So everybody go check it out. It's funny, we came up with that talking about Krypton Season 2 where the Black Mercy Flower makes an appearance. Like, why didn't they ever do it on Smallville? It's such an obvious thing to do. They could have called the episode Mercy. It would have been great.
It's perfect.
And then, of course, we forgot that they already was an episode called Mercy. But you're right. That the last thing people expected was a Saw episode when you have that. But anyway, that's what we got. Lionel guesses on his, you know, I guess it was an iPad. Was there iPads back then? I don't know. They're rich. They have technology. He jumps out of the limo, and I believe it's a shot that it gets incorporated in the main credits for season six.
Yeah, that's,
yes.
It's such an opening credit shot. Like I feel like it's like anything that John Glover does with any of these reaction shots, like the one you guys were talking about from way back from Legacy. You know, the turning around that they use that on It's just like react, John, and then he's just like. He just does a thing with his hair and makes it look all cool and epic.
He's an actor's actor for sure. But he jumps out of there. The limo gets hit by the train. The Smallville sign has graffiti on it that says having fun yet. We'll take a screenshot of those as well because I think it's interesting just see another. Clearly that was the same prop, right? They just put it there. And I wonder if we ever saw it again after that, or it always had that graffiti on it the rest of its time on the show. Something to think about.
Also, it struck me the master planning of Jigsaw that he like because he's not going to write that while he's doing the video with Lionel, right? So he must have like got up or late at night and wrote that there.
This guy's dedicated. So we cut their opening credits. We come back, and it's Clark and Chloe at the Daily Planet. We have we're getting lots of tally boards right at the top here. We got a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket, because Clark's wearing his pseudo Superman costume. Clark and Chloe are talking about Lionel. Clark's complaining that he's always around, and he's helping his mom. And again, this works because we've seen it in the show already. It's not just this one episode we've seen it. So that deleted scene, it works. Removing it, you don't need it. So. Yeah. Chloe's like, well, you know, you need to tell her that he knows your secret. And I understand Clark's reasoning for not telling Martha because, like, she had been through so much with losing Jonathan. It's another thing she has to deal with being a senator. So for all the secrets and lies on this show, like the Martha Clark stuff in this episode, I see both sides and I'm not going to complain about it. I think everyone can relate to things like that in real life.
Yeah, it makes more sense that it doesn't feel like force. Like, I feel like of all people, he is most protective of Martha. You know, and they have that really close mother and son relationship. So I could totally get that for like 100%.
So then we get to Lionel at Luther Mansion.
And, one of my favorite scenes.
Of course, he thinks Lex is behind it because that's what they do. When somebody tries to kill them, they assume it was the other one. Interesting, Lex is there with some chests and the whole episode. I mean, again, good writing. It's about games, right? So that gives Lionel Lionel an end, like, oh, chess. How about another game? Hangman. And
that's always fun.
Lex is going to teach a friend of mine. And we're all like, oh, I wonder who's this going to be, right? Of course, it's going to be Lana.
That part always makes me laugh out loud when I watch it, too, because, like, you know, everything the two of them always say about games and, you know, we don't need to play games, son, and, you know, all their little subtext, right? Like, it's always subtextual for what they're doing to each other. But this time, Lex genuinely has no clue, and he's literally teaching it to a friend. I always just think that's really funny. Like, Lionel just dismisses the friend comment, and then moments later, he says something else, and Lex is like, what? Like, he genuinely doesn't know.
What are you talking about? Yeah, because Lionel, he's like, all right, fine. You tried to kill me, right? And Lex, he says, killing you would hurt the bottom line, right? Because That's a great response to that, because again, this is the expositional dialogue I was talking about that I needed back in season like 2 and 3 to understand who was running Luther Corp and why, and how Lex and Lionel were working with the company together, because Lex tells him that he brought him in to help run Luther Corp again, and profits has never been higher. Say what you will if Lex would really do that or not, but the fact is the show tells you what is going on, because I still can't tell you when Lex Corp went away and became Luther Corp and who's been in charge of Luther Corp and all that. Let me ask you this. The office that Lionel is in, is it the same office that he was in before? But is Lex now in that office and we're seeing another office? Because obviously it's the same set, right? We know that. But are those supposed to be two different offices?
I'm always really confused by that because, like, we saw Lex kicked him out in vengeance, right? I hope you enjoyed your stay. Sorry it was so short, right? And, like, so he kicked him out of his office. And the assumption was, like, pack your bags, like, this is my office, like, now. But then every time we see Lionel after, like, in Cyborg, and he's listening to his opera and just chilling in his office, like, always. So I think the assumption is...
These are two offices side by side.
Well,
the same floor.
I never thought of that. That's a good interpretation.
That's the only way I can think of.
I mean, the middle of this episode, Lex says, in past tense, my father... liked to have a place where he could conduct certain transactions without a surveillance, which again implies like it's not his office anymore, or maybe Lionel's just Lionel, so he's like, I don't care if it's my office, I'm still gonna go in there like and do my thing because I'm Lionel. Like, could be, or maybe Lex is just like, cool, you can have your office, Dad, like, because Lex is in control now, so he's like okay with him going back to his office because Lex is now the CEO. Perhaps
one of Smallville's great mysteries. So, you know, it's established here that Lex didn't do it, and also we get Lionel's getting a headache. Earlier, we saw him kind of feel like he had a headache too. He was going to take out some pills, and this is something having not rewatched this in a while. I was like, oh, is he being drugged by this guy? He doesn't know is it coming into play here. No, it has nothing to do with the Saw plot. It's something with a greater overall arc of the season plot, which I think is very interesting. So they're just planting those subtle hits. Now, again, like, season 5 is back on track of, like, hinting stuff that's coming.
Yeah.
Early season 5 is like this, and then in the middle, they're like, oh, we don't know, we got renewed again, we thought we were going to end, and now we're back on track.
They do a good job of that with this episode in particular. It reminded me of, like, season 3, where they have all the seeds that were planted earlier, and now they're planting the seeds for the end of it, and all the threads kind of connect really well.
So then we get Martha practicing her speech at home. Clark has come home to basically tell her that, hey, Lionel knows my secret. Of course, included in her speech are truth, justice, the American way. And Martha asks Clark what he thinks, and he says, sounds like words to live by, which is a very good Superman reference. I like that one.
It's not as corny as some of the ones. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like it fits something that Martha would say in a Senate race.
Right. I can't sit here and tell you why I like some and others infuriate me, but this one I liked. So
it's not like be my super shuttle.
Also, leaps tall anything in a single bound, those infuriate me because in a world without Superman, no one would say that. People say that now because of the radio show and the old cartoon and the George Reeves show. People quote that. That's what they say. In a world without Superman, no one would say that.
Maybe it was a warrior. Maybe it was a warrior angel slur.
The Warrior Angel TV show from the 50s said that. But But you know, Clark tries to tell, like, Mom, we need to talk about something. She's like, oh, honey, can wait till tomorrow. I got to go to my thing. And he's like, Lionel knows my secret.
Yeah. It's like, whoa. I was like, dude, Clark, you're going to give her a heart attack saying it like that. Tell her to sit down first.
This was a very good, like, coming clean for both of them, right? Because she says, well, I think he knows how. And Clark's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, a while ago, someone sent me a laptop with footage of you saving someone from an explosion. And I like how characters know certain things about other things. And anyway, this was, it wasn't quite the, Aunt May Peter Parker scene from Spider-Man 2, where he's like, I'm the reason Uncle Ben died, but it was like, it was that kind of scene. That's kind of where my mind went with this. Cause I love those movies so much.
Totally. Where the confession happens and all of the things they've been holding in kind of like come out and it's come to fruition like that. Now, I also had a question rewatching that too, was your interpretation of, because I thought this was also interesting and really good writing, the fact that it's a subtle thing, but it was something that I was noticing rewatching it, was like the fact that Martha says that about, I think I know how Lionel knows, and she references the video, right? So the assumption on Martha's part would be that the video threat, the blackmail, was real, that Lionel usurped the situation and that's how he saw the video. But we know that he, yeah, exactly. So it was just an interesting, subtle little, you know, bit of her not knowing the whole scope of Lionel's plans.
Exactly. I understand the reasonings for both of them. Clark's like, why did you tell me this before? He's like, well, with your dad passing away and, you know, you were going through so much and I didn't want you to put this burden on you too. And like, so they both are trying to, she's like, it'd be nice to save you for once, to protect you for once, right? So they're both trying to protect each other in reasonable ways. Like, it's so much of this show is not. So when it's like when things you can actually relate to and connect with and understand, like obviously we don't have these sorts of problems in our real life, but you can extrapolate this to real life situations where people don't tell people other things because they're trying to protect them from things.
Oh,
they don't
totally
want to burden them with information. I'm like, okay, this is some good writing, some mature thinking. Right, that you can follow through. You know, obviously, they both realize, as you always do, like, hey, you should really just come clean on everything all the time. But I like how both characters handle this, and this is a good scene. And he's like, well, let me come to this fundraiser with you. She's like, well, Lionel will be there tonight, and she's like, no. If you start, you know, being my bodyguard, he'll get suspicious. I can handle Lionel, and she leaves. I'm like, yeah, you can handle Lionel. She's pretty much the only one who can. So I love her even in this situation. I love her confidence.
I loved her self-assurance with that too. I can handle Lionel. Like it was such a great little like Martha moment because she knows how he feels about her. Cause like it seems like anyone else would be like terrified to go and handle Lionel or to talk, you know, they'd either be terrified or they'd be like Jonathan, like just infuriated and freaking mm-hmm. out. Right. But Martha keeps her composure cause she's got that, like, she knows she has that trump card over him that he's lusting after her, so it's she's got that going, and then she knows she kind of she's also from Lionel's background, right? Like, I mean, from Metropolis, so like she knows kind of how to deal with people like him. And so I thought that was a cool little moment.
So let me cut to Luther Corp, and Lionel is getting his and or Lex's office. We're not sure, but this office is being scanned by random security guard man. I'm sure he won't come into play later. Like. You know, watching this, you're like, they gave this nameless extra just a little too much focus than they usually do.
Yep.
So this guy's going to come back, I think.
Smallville is always really funny because, like, it also reminds me of, like, you know, in season 4 with the guy who kills Alicia.
Oh, the Sandman.
Yeah, the Sandman. like when you see him in the hall and he's like acting all, you know, like just this random, they're acting like he's a random Smallville student.
Facing the crowd.
Like whenever they do that and you know, like they're not just going to do that with a miscellaneous person. He's going to be, mm-hmm. he's going to come back later kind of thing.
the show played it well. I think it was smart here because if the guy had taken off his face at the end and been no one you'd ever seen before, it would be kind of unsatisfying. Although it's just one episode here. They at least, okay, there he was. We saw him. It explains how he had access to the office, right? He scans the very statue that ends up having the device in it that makes all this possible. You know, then obviously he had his hoodie like in his bag and puts it on and hides under the couch or something after this. Because, you know, after this scan, right? Everything's all clear. And then Lionel says, well, it better be or you're going to be working at a gas station washing hot dogs.
Like spin. It's such a Lionel thing to say. Like, it's so good.
And even when Jigsaw calls him, he's like, "Hot dog spin, that's not very nice." And you think he's just monitoring him, but no, he was that guy that he said, spoilers, he was that guy, right?
I love that. I love that, like Lionel is makes the leap in logic that actually is more logical considering the logic of Smallville, that maybe the guy has some sort of power to read lips or something, you know? When he's like,
or he has some binoculars.
Lips
he's
or
watching
binoculars.
Him from
yeah, yeah. yeah. Like, nope, he was just in
he's
his
just
office.
In the office hiding under the couch.
I'm going to pose a random alternative that would have been really cool that just came to me just now thinking of this. When you said that about, it was cool that at least it was someone that we saw the face of. This is just a really random thing, but wouldn't it have been hilarious if it was Sheriff Ethan? Like, if he had gotten out of jail.
That
would have
been really good, actually. he really did destroy his life.
Right?
Although Ethan kind of destroyed it himself by framing his best friend from high school for murder.
Yes, totally.
I wouldn't do that, Lance. I would not frame you for murder. But that's the equivalent. That'd be like if Lance and I framed each other for murder. All right?
So. And then you went to jail for framing Lance, and then you spent however many years rotting away in jail, and then it would be two movie plots for an episode, because you could go all, Ethan could be all Cape Fear, like he could have the tattoos all over his body, and then he'd come out of jail and stuff.
But yeah, because I'm thinking that too. Like, could they have brought back a character we know of, right? But they tie up so many of these one off, you know, characters. Like, Sheriff Ethan actually would have been the only one that actually would have made some sense. That's a great idea, Rocky. Good job. Good call on that.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, Lionel gets a call, and it's, you know, it's Jigsaw, and the Jigsaw turns off the power. And I love it. Jigsaw says, "How does it feel to not be in control?" And Lionel says, "If it ever happens, I'll let you know." So he's still got it, right? And not once in this episode do I feel like Lionel's ever out of character. I think completely in line with especially his morally ambiguous self at this point.
There's no like puppies and hugs Lionel of season four. Like this feels very like who the guy is. And that's one of the reasons it's actually one of my favorite episodes, because it would have been really easy, I think, for the writers to lean into or it making him more of a nice guy in this episode to try to make him more sympathetic. You know what I mean? Like to try to, now we're turning him into nice Lionel again, like make him sit. But I like that they didn't do that. Like, they make him a jerk throughout the whole
every opportunity.
Thing. But you still, because he's such a good actor, you root for, but yeah, I love that. He's just so in character. It's fantastic.
Well, this is the one, so many TV shows do this. Like, they keep the villain around way longer, like Arrow with Malcolm Merlyn or Heroes with Sylar, right? Because you love the character, you love the actor, you love everything that happened. But like, look, man, that story's over. You got to move on. Like, Lionel Luther and John Glover is the one exception to that rule, because no matter what they put him in, he's incredible and you want to see him, right? So
it's like they could do whatever they want and he's always going to make it. He's always going to shine and make you drawn to it. And there's some of the stuff that is just completely like a almost absurd, like, logic leaps with certain aspects with where they take the character, as, you know, as you've talked about on the podcast, with certain things. But even those things, like the Veritas stuff or whatever, he manages to sell that stuff too. Or like literally him eating Thanksgiving dinner next to Chloe, who he tried to blow up a few years ago. Like, he makes it work.
Well, they handled this much better than season four, where he was just suddenly good after Transference and then suddenly bad after Onyx. Like, complete. They just didn't know what they were doing. But here they're like, at least lean into the ambiguity. But the Lionel's like, "What do you want?" And he's like, "I want to play another game." I'm like, come on, guys. If you're going to rip off Saw, you're literally quoting what Jigsaw says to him. I'm like, "I want to play a game." They use that in trailers. Everybody knows that's from Saw. But again, it works in this episode for me. Like, it doesn't infuriate me like some of the other, like, "We're going to do Fast and the Furious." I'm like, it's so dumb. Like, why would you do that?
I am kind of surprised, though, that, like, when they do these ripoff ones, like, usually Chloe will, like, acknowledge the ripoff. I'm kind of surprised she didn't say, like, you know, something along those lines of, like, "So when we track down, like, Jigsaw wannabe, where do, you know?"
Yeah.
I guess she usually does that.
It was too soon. It was probably too soon, I think, was the problem. Anyway, this guy, he pops out, he knocks out Lionel with, like, some, you know, sedative, and then Lionel wakes up in this furnace, right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Very
Dante,
a match,
very good.
Right? And he sees this charred corpse, and we find out what happened to Alex, his driver, Right.
That was brutal. That was a good brutal moment. And Lionel puts, when he puts his coat on the driver, that was such a like surprising, subtle moment of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is the ambiguous Lionel here. And I think an episode like this was necessary, right, in order to kind of shift us over to him being an ally for the last, I guess, 2.5 years he's on the show, as opposed to what he had been, you know, for little things like that. But he wakes up in this furnace, and then Jigsaw comes on the TV, and Lionel's like, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm one of the faceless people your greed has destroyed." And I'm like, "Okay, well,
that narrows it down." I love that.
That is good. That reminds me of Batman Beyond. Have you seen Batman Beyond?
Oh yeah, yeah, of course, yeah.
So at the season one finale, Terry McGinnis is Batman at this point. He's, quote, Batman Beyond. And he's gone to confront Blight, who was voiced by Sherman Howard, who played Lex Luthor on Superboy, by the way. So hashtag it's all connected. But he's Derek Powers. He's like the overarching villain in Batman Beyond season one. And at the end of the season, he's like, "You killed my father." And Blight tells him, "Do you have any idea how little that narrows it down?" And that's kind of what that's like.
This is just a totally random tangent, but I have to go off of that, what you're saying there, mm-hmm. really quickly. That was one thing that never made sense to me with Batman 89, you know, when Bruce says, you killed my parents. And then Nicholson's just like, "I was a kid when I killed your parents, Batsy." And I always thought, like, wait, he's killed so many parents. How does he know who he's talking about?
Well, that is one of those ambiguous things about Batman 89. You're like, wait, did he know who he was at that point? Like, did he remember killing the Waynes? Like, surely he's killed lots of people. But he went, "See you around, kid." He remembers that one kid. He's like, "This must be the guy." So always finish the job. You never know what kid might turn into a superhero and defeat you one day. So
exactly.
This guy, he's ranting on Lionel about how you're just a typical businessman. Your workers work and you reap all the benefits. And I think my favorite line of the episode is here. Lionel says, "It's called running a business. That's how it works." And he, you know, he raises his voice and yells at the guy like, "That's how it works." I thought that was so good.
That line always makes me laugh because he's so sanctimonious about it. Like, he just thinks that this guy's a complete like fool. He doesn't know how a business is run. but it's just so great because like that's how he justifies these outrageous, you know, the outrageous things he's done, like murdering people and stuff. But to him, it's like, "That's how it works." So good.
That is probably my favorite line in the episode. But we get explained like what's going to happen. They show a video of Alex's driver. And that is very on par for Saw to have videos of other people going through the traps. I was like, man, this is so on point for Saw. Like, really though, of all, even though it probably is my favorite of the movie rip-offs, this is the most beat for beat, right? It's like you talk about,
yeah.
Well, this one's kind of like Fatal Attraction because there's a girlfriend who can't get over the guy not liking her anymore. This one's kind of like Fast and the Furious because we have cars, right? But it's like, no, this is Saw. Like, this is not inspired by Saw. This
right down
Saw.
To the costume and everything, you know.
The dialogue. "I want to play a game." Anyway, find out. Lionel, what he has to do is he has to carry these two cans of gasoline, right, or whatever they are, over on this pole, over to this hook. If they spill, the whole room is going to go up because it's a furnace. So this, the scales of justice, right? There's these very well thought out death traps this guy has. So Lionel has to do that. But meanwhile, we cut from this furnace to the fireplace at Luther Mansion. There's some good editing here, some good lighting. Again, that's James Marshall bringing what he brings to it, I think. And we see Lex, as Lex and Lana are prone to do, having a moment in front of the fireplace. if you go back season five, for real, I think at least half these episodes have a scene with Lex and Lana having some kind of pseudo-intimate moment in front of that damn fireplace. So
Lex does it on purpose. He knows what he's doing.
So they're playing chess, and Lana's like, "What are we doing?" He's like, "I thought we were enjoying an evening of chess." And Lana's like, "We haven't talked about what happened in a week." And, you know, this is very true to life as well. I don't know how people have, you've maybe had a kiss, and you're like, "Oh, what do we do?" And then you avoid it, and then you do something else, and then it comes out, and Lex is like, "Well, I was waiting for you to bring that up." Like, again, this is the complicated nature of relationships is actually very accurate here.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like how it's all kind of cloaked in this, like, the awkwardness of him trying to teach her the game and stuff like that. Which also, I kind of thought, like, I don't know how much this was planned or not. I'm on the same page as you with hating Lexana in season six, but but I do think it's, if this was a subtle foreshadowing, it was kind of cool, him teaching her chess and her becoming a Luther later and becoming like a master at the game of the Luther game. You know, I thought that was kind of a cool little thing.
Which they try to do, and you know, as we talked on and off, and we'll talk a little more about that in the next season, right? But I think one, and we've talked about this with many guests as well on the show, and I think that's one way they could have gone with it. Like, she like really just goes over to Lex's side, and that's like, but the show would never do that. They would never take their female lead, right? Lana Lang, girl next door,
right?
You're like the evil, or at least conflictedly evil Luther, right?
Exactly. Well, when the season six promo came out, I remember when they used to come out with like the WB or like
the upfronts.
Yeah, totally. I implanted some of those in my memory, and I remember they came out with a thing where they were like, this season is all about the corruption of good. And they were like, we've got Martha and Lionel, and we've got Lana with Lex. And when they wrote it that way. So, you know, I'm sure they were just playing games with everyone. But, like, I thought it was interesting because it seemed like maybe that could have been the original conception a little bit, perhaps.
Because you know Martha is never going to get with Lionel, right? That's never going to happen.
Well, Martha, no. But with Lana.
But like, Lana, maybe, yeah. Like, you could actually sit there and be like, well, I can, you know, she's been burned by Clarks, and that's another regret. I think in Clark's youth that he really screwed up two of his closest relationships. And I don't know, maybe they would have thought that been too much like Lex, right? But I don't know. I would have gone and you know, in a perfect world, Lexana never would have happened other than these like subtle under the surface things they had going on up till this point, right?
Totally.
But then it did happen. But if it did happen, I wouldn't want them to get married and then have a fake baby, et cetera, et cetera. But again, that's for next season. Let's move on. Lex does say when she's like, what are we doing? He's like, well, I have Monopoly.
Okay. I feel like that was a good Michael Rosenbaum improv.
He does tell her, like, well, if you want me to forget what happened, it's going to take a short of a serious blow to the head. I don't think it's going to be a memory that lingers for a long time, which is funny because...
Or a memory wipe.
Yeah. One, he gets hit in the head all the time, has amnesia all the time, and the series ends with him getting his memory wiped. So obviously they weren't thinking about that back then. Might have been an in-joke about how many times he gets knocked out. Steve Ness tonight was very clever as to, you know, the tropes of the show. So, anyway. But then, you know, he gets a phone call, and I was like, you better take that. I'm going to go back to Metropolis and leaves. And that's her one scene in the episode. I love how Lex is so mad when he answers his phone. He's like, what?
What?
Because this ruined his moment, right? And he's like, okay, close down the plaza. I don't want anyone else to know that my father's missing. So clearly someone has found that Lionel has gone missing. And then we cut back to Lionel in the furnace. And he's in his undershirt, and as always, John Glover, man, fitness goals, because you know he's
totally,
you know, he's probably in his late 50s here, and he is in better shape than I've ever been in my life. So
yep, same.
He's doing a good job, you know, carrying these buckets of gas across the furnace. Now the guy starts egging him. He's like, "Oh, I bet you missed those $1,000 Italian shoes." He's like, "I grew up on the streets of Suicide Slum. I know a thing or two about blood and sweat." And he's like, yeah, that's right, until you murdered your parents. And he's like, I didn't kill my parents.
Okay, so we have to talk about this, right?
We have to talk about this. I do want to ask you, what do you think about this? Because what Jigsaw says, he says, tell a lie long enough and you'll believe it to be true. And I think that's the case here, because I think Lionel did kill his parents, because that's the Lex Luthor origin story in some of the versions of the comics, right? So I think absolutely he killed his parents, but I like they at least brought it up here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So I totally agree. I think that this moment answered it really succinctly. I was never a fan of like when in season four, when, you know, when he was turning into good Lionel, I was never a fan of that moment when he goes to the warden, the lawyer, and he's like, you know, I didn't kill my parents, but I'm guilty of many other crimes. I should be here for. And I was like, dude, like, are they trying to like, I thought at the time, like, are
cast
they trying
doubt
to
doubt on that? Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, are they, because maybe now they're just, my idea at the time was like, maybe they were, because they were trying to turn him good, they were trying to water down certain things like that are just unforgivable. So I thought maybe they were going to do something else with that. And I never liked that. I was like, dude, if he's like, if they're going to turn him good, that's fine. But like, at least acknowledge all of the evil that he's done and like, keep that as like his story arc. So when Jigsaw said that, I was like, okay, that explains it really well. And then looking at like, I've studied a lot of like psychopaths and stuff like that for movies that I've written. So I've studied like real life crime. And one of the things is that they can never, a psychopath cannot admit fault. And a narcissist. So Lionel's both.
He's both.
Like, he is like, so I could understand. I mean, especially because since he had Morgan Edge do the physical deed, it's a lot like, Charles Manson to the end of his days would never admit that he killed anybody, because technically he had his people do it for him. So like,
right.
To him, it's like, oh, I can tell them whatever I want, but I didn't do anything. I'm not culpable. They did what they wanted to. So that's probably how Lionel's mind was, I think. Just like, oh, Morgan did what he wanted to do. Like, I didn't make him do anything.
I think that is essential, right, into the whole, the shifting of his character. I'm so glad they brought it up, because you'd always be like, well, this guy killed his parents, right? But at least that's, there it was. They, as you said, they succinctly brought that up and moved on from it, at least as far as Lionel is concerned. And when Chloe has the truth serum.
Yes.
She asked him, he's like, well, of course I did. I needed their insurance money to start my company. I'm like, well, that's it. You can't retcon that. But again, he hired Morgan Edge to do it, so there's some disassociation there. So it all tracks, I think.
Plausible deniability.
But Lionel, he does achieve this challenge, so he moves on to the next test. And the room does blow up, right? lots of jumping, you know, for Lionel, and this episode, lots of explosions. But he goes into the next room for the next test, and it's Martha! She's in a soundproof water chamber.
That always reminds me of like the Batman, the animated series, when Joker has Batman in the water thing.
The water tank.
And he's like, you know, if the great Houdini can do it, then why not Batman? As he's like, so good.
It's a very superhero item to have. So yes, we have to save Martha, to quote BVS, Dawn of Justice. So that's next. I know you love that movie, man, but that meme will never die.
Like, it will never die. It will totally. There was another one earlier where I was thinking of that too. It'll never get old.
So we have Clark and Chloe at the Daily Planet, and she wants to investigate what's going on. But Clark's like, no, we can't be drawing attention to you, because she mentions that Lionel was her source about sending Clark to Honduras and that kind of thing. But Clark, he doesn't want to involve her, because then he might turn his sights towards her, because they don't know what his intentions are. While they're having this conversation, they get a phone call from Lois. Erica Durance is off this week, so they're saving this 13 episodes that she gets a season. They're saving her from being in this one. So
they literally had her phone it in.
Lois. Yeah, literally funny. But she's Martha's chief of staff at this point, and she calls Clark to check on Martha because she didn't show up at the fundraiser. I'm not sure exactly. This is one of my like not connecting the dots quite right. So from here, Chloe and Clark go to Luther Corp. They knew Lionel was going to be there and Martha was going to see him, but then like, why go to like, oh, let's go to Lionel's office at Luther Corp and talk about it. Like, it's kind of tracks, but that's the one thing I'm like, we literally cut from this to them walking into Lionel's office.
I was a little confused about that too. Like, at first I was thinking like, wait, was the fundraiser supposed to be at Luther Corp? But it wasn't. I guess it could have been like Clark thought that his mom got in over her head with Lionel, and that Lionel's back at Luther Corp or something, and he was coming to like accuse Lionel of something, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ridiculous stretch of believability, but it's like they're just walking in, and Lex is like, oh, it's okay, let him through. Clark, what the hell are you doing here? Right, it's typical dialogue there.
And then Clark's all like, we're looking for your father.
Yeah, so again, like, why? Your mom's missing. What does it have to do with that? And so we get, they share information, well, Martha's missing, well, Lionel's missing. And this is where he established there's no security cameras in the office, which explains a lot of stuff about some shady stuff that's going on. Think about what's happened in that office. We've had the Angel of Vengeance has popped in. We've had Jonathan and Clark have a super fight. We've had Kryptonite. You know, we've had all kinds. That's an office. Or maybe another office that looks just like it. We don't know.
And
these offices have had a lot of action.
And the whole thing that went down in Insurgents, you know?
Yeah.
Lionel wouldn't have had any like video to come back to.
Well, I mean, he's blind. What use is security footage if he's blind? It makes perfect sense.
He could be having his goons watch it and then be berating them for not making the footage better in a week. This is the best you can do.
I know your secret. Don't worry, I haven't told anyone. So we have these Ming Dynasty statues that we've never seen before. So that kind of makes me think this is his new office, right?
Yes.
Because Lex is like, all right, you can have this office. Here's some leftover stuff from storage you can decorate with. Clark is X-raying around looking for, you know, some clue, right? And he sees this device inside this Chinese artifact. And Clark has to bring it to their attention without revealing his X-ray vision. He's like, hey, has this chip always been on this thing over here? And Lex is like, no, my father would never accept such damage to such a priceless artifact or something, right? So then he picks it up and he throws it against the ground and shatters, and everyone's like, whoa. Like, even Clark's like, I didn't expect them to do that.
And Lex is, it's so great when Lex is just like, nice catch. You know? Yeah. Like,
oh, look at them being friends. But yeah, that was a, I didn't expect Lex to just shatter that thing. And then they find this item, and Chloe picks it up and is like, oh, let's insert technobabble here. What did, oh, well, maybe I can piggyback on the signal because it's deactivated and blah, blah, blah. She's become Felicity Smoke, basically.
Yep.
In this episode. They really, I mean, Chloe has always been kind of computer savvy, but like season five, she really becomes like hacker Chloe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I don't really buy that. That's, I mean, I love Chloe, right? Everybody knows. But that was never really part of the skill set of like an intrepid reporter. Like, I'm also a computer hacker. Like, no, no, not necessarily.
It really did start this season, didn't it?
Yeah, it started with Mortal, where she's plugging in her laptop at Luther Corp and just opening doors just and like, all kinds of stuff. Always has that damn yellow laptop with her doing all these things. So, but then we cut back to the Death Trap, and Death Trap number two. It's like these words, and the Jigsaw's like, you've used words against people, now you must use them to save yourself. And you know, Martha's gonna drown if Lionel doesn't solve this puzzle in time, and they're freaking out about it, right? And then I thought it was so funny that, like, he's looking at these letters, he's like, what does it mean? And Martha's like, it's a word puzzle!
Oh yeah,
like,
I was laughing so much.
Of course it is!
A word puzzle, Lionel. An anagram. You scramble. It's a word puzzle. A word. And she's like, yes,
it's a word puzzle. Yeah, yeah. I kind of picked up on that. But you know, it's this marquee and letters. He has to move them around. So then we cut back to Luther Corp, and Lex kind of extends an olive branch to Clark here. He's like, man, it's a shame a tragedy like this is the only thing that can get us together. Maybe when this is all over, we can, you know, find some common ground again. And Clark just kind of looks at him, doesn't really respond.
Okay, so that moment was so funny. And also, like, I was wondering your take on that moment. Was Lex being genuine, or was he just being Lex? And, like where did you, when you first saw it, and then, like rewatching it, like, do you think he was being genuine?
I think he was. Like, Lex is a complicated guy.
I think he was.
I think he misses Clark Kent as his friend. You know, I mean, that's
I think
true.
So.
So
I think so. I mean, Lex Smith showed that, right? That
he was missing
his Clark friendship. So
plus he's about to move in on Clark's ex girlfriend, so he wants to kind of like, hey, we cool, right? This is fine.
And then Clark's just having none of it. He's just like, how much longer is this going to take, Chloe?
Yeah, he does nothing to say. This is where Chloe is still Felicity Smoke here. She finds, like, oh, I piggybacked it at this place, you know, not far from here. And, like, Lex takes a phone call, right? And he comes back, and Clark's about to super speed off. And Lex's like, what'd you guys find out? Well, we'll take my Porsche. It's a lot faster than your truck. It's like, I love it when Clark gets trapped. I want to see where Clark and Lex are driving there. Like, what do they talk about?
That would have been the best scene ever. Just like the two, like, how awkward and how fun would that be to just see?
Yeah,
them.
Just imagining those two having to go on a car ride,
hashing out stuff and talking. That would have been really fun. Like, I always wondered too. Like, it was funny because, like you said, he was trapped in that situation, right? But like at the same time, like, he's so quick to jump the gun because he's Clark and we love him, right? That like usually, like, the minute that Lex would, like, turn around or something, he would still just be gone without any explanation. So I thought that was interesting that, like, this, like, now he's maybe trying to be a little bit more stealth.
Well, that lasts for about 10 minutes until he does this.
And then he does the same
thing. He does the same thing. But, you know, they're going off to follow the signal Chloe tracked. And I will say in my headcanon that Chloe is using Luther Corp computer resources to find these things, that she's not doing it by herself. But we cut back to the Death Trap number two, and Lionel has, well, I guess it's technically Death Trap number three, because the limo with was Death Trap number one.
Oh, but, yes.
But Lionel has solved it. It's a failed takeover, because the F and the T are capital, and the other letters are not. So that's Martha helping Lionel out solve this puzzle. And he explains that Apex, and, you know, this is a subplot of, like, Vengeance, where Lionel started this Apex group to take over Luther Corp. It's a deep continuity cut, and I liked it.
I was really excited when this first aired and he started shouting, it's Apex! I was like, oh, cool. Like, that's so cool they didn't forget about that. And, like, they're keeping it as part of the arc and all of that stuff. Because, like, after Vengeance, I was pretty frustrated for a while with the whole Lionel subplot. I mean, I was loving the whole subplot of Lionel, but I kept being like, but he did do this stuff, right? Like, I was like, yeah. Like he killed Vengeance's mom, right? Like, he did, like, no one
killed Vengeance's mom. Batman Beyond is the character's name, and Vengeance is also that character's name.
Yeah, so I was glad they brought that back up, and that it was like that they showed that just as recently as, you know, however many weeks ago that he did this, that he just ruined all of these lives. It wasn't puppies and hugs, Lionel, you know, like,
right.
He's complicated, but he's still done these really bad things just as recently as weeks ago.
and it pays off some continuity, like, oh, you were paying attention a few weeks ago, like, you get rewarded for, like, these things matter. These things have side effects.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
And then we have one last game, because Martha and Lionel get out of there, and when they solve the puzzle, the whole Chinese water trap, right? That's what it's called, right?
Chinese water trap.
I'm sure I heard that somewhere. It was called that. Probably Houdini called it that, I guess, to make it sound more cool. But it shatters, and they get up, and they're going to go up a staircase, and they're like, is that the way out? And he's like, yes, or you could stay here and get electrocuted, or you can play one last game. And so they go up the staircase, because the floor gets electrocuted. Like,
Lionel just, like, darts up there, and Martha takes a second and looks like, is he being serious? And then it just starts electrocuting, and she runs.
Well, this guy, what, he got laid off from Apex or whatever, and he has unlimited resources, apparently.
That was one of the things that, like... It doesn't bother me because it's Smallville, but it's one of the logic leaps that was a little bit harder to justify if it was more of like a reality based show. Like,
well,
the
episode Forever in season 4 where the guy,
of course,
duplicates
where he somehow has the
Smallville
resources to make the high school.
But his dad, like, owned a construction company, and, like, I was like, okay, you at least address the fact how this could happen. So I give him that. But anyway. So they run up this staircase, and it's an elevator test, and they go in this you know, industrial elevator, and then it slams shut.
This is one of my worst fears, by the way. Like, the,
you're stuck in an elevator?
Yeah, I actually am so phobic that I don't take elevators. Like, I'll go up the stairs. I was actually quite nervous when I went to the symphony with my girlfriend, and there was only an elevator. There was no stairs. And I was like, oh, this was like early in our dating, so she didn't know all my neuroses yet. So I was like, oh, I can't show her I'm afraid of the elevator. I guess I'll go in the elevator. But I hate it. Like,
did you face your fear?
I faced my fear, like Bruce Wayne in the Batcave. I faced my fear, and it's all good. But no, I hate it. So when Lionel and Martha get in there and it just slams shut, I was like, oh.
I mean, to be fair, this is a pretty big elevator, and there's also a grated fence around it. So it's not like being in a
closed
office
little,
elevator, but
yeah.
point taken. So then we get some exposition. Martha's like, what's Apex? And Lionel's like, look, I tried to take back Luther Corp. And Martha's like, you ruined those people's lives to get back at Lex. He's like, no, to teach him a lesson.
And Martha's reaction is so great. She's just like, oh my God.
He's like, perhaps if I took away all the power, he could re-find his humanity. And, like, you know what? I think he does really believe this. And Martha's like, why didn't you just talk to him?
I think he does too. And that brought up a really interesting question for food for thought I was going to ask you. So how long, in your opinion, obviously the writers did not quite know what they were going to do with Lionel until, you know, maybe this episode, you know, but let's just say when you're fan watching it, rewatching all of it, right? Like, so how long do you think that Lionel, that this was his motivation to take the power away from Lex and keep it for himself because he knows that he's already corrupt, but he's trying to help save his son, like from becoming like him. Like, do you think that this was like when in Onyx, when he snaps back into Magnificent Bastard Lionel, do you think that was where he was at? Or do you think it was after the stone zapped him that he...
Yeah, I think it was commencement where he got zapped by the stone.
You think that was where the turn to like ambiguous Lionel happened? Like ambiguous leaning on the side of good Lionel happened?
Although he did shoot Jason Teague to keep him from telling Lex Clark's secret.
Yes.
So
was that to protect Lex from himself, or to protect Clark, or was it like
knowledge is power, man?
Knowledge
is
power.
Other people to know. So I mean, there's ambiguity there, but it works. So, but I think as Lionel says in this episode, right, it's when, you know, the crystal activated and he had it. That's where he kind of quote unquote turned good. So
yeah, that makes sense. That's why I always think if like Lexmas was if Lexmas was a real vision of the future, and Lionel is super evil, to Lex in that episode in the vision of the future. I always think that that's an interesting, like, that could be a possible future if Lionel perhaps was not an ally of Clark. Like, maybe he would have slid back to the complete dark side and been evil Lionel if he was not, like, if he didn't have the knowledge or if he didn't have the trust of Clark and Martha. Like, maybe he...
No, well, yeah, and he didn't have Martha to live for.
Then, right?
Because Jonathan was still alive, so that's the main... She's the key! The key to everything! There you go. EBS, Dawn of Justice. You heard it here first. But there's another good Lionel dialogue
Martha,
here.
Martha.
There's another bit of good dialogue here because Martha's like, why didn't you just talk to him? And Lionel says, Lex is not Clark, and I'm not the father Jonathan Kent was. I'm like, all right, there we go.
That was one of the most human Lionel moments ever for him to actually admit that. Like, and it was really cool to go back and rewatch stuff like Legacy, where he's just so... completely the antithesis to Jonathan, and you know, if you'd raise your son like mine, you wouldn't have to protect him, you know, like, right. And now he's actually admitting that to himself. That was a really cool moment of evolution for him.
But then Jigsaw comes on, it's like, oh, an actual caring for another human being. What a refreshing thing to see. Right? He makes little comments throughout this whole thing about, like, oh, you actually care for I always suspected your relationship with the senator was more than professional.
Less than political or something.
Yeah, less than political. So we get some exposition about what's going to happen here, right? Like, one of them has to kill the other. And if they don't, I'll blow both of the fairies up, right? That kind of situation.
But if, by midnight.
Exactly. So, like, there's an explosive at the top of the elevator. It'll come crashing down if they don't shoot, if one of them doesn't shoot the other. I believe, you know, this episode's leaning heavily on the continuity from Vengeance. I believe this is the gun that he got from, like, General MacArthur's gun. It looks like the same gun.
It could totally be the same gun. Yeah.
I didn't go back and compare, but it has that kind of white, you know, handle, so it might be the same gun.
Oh, that could, I would, yeah, that's a really good catch. That's a really good catch. I was always hoping that would be the gun that Lex would use to kill Lionel.
That was what, clearly, had Smallville ended in season 5, that is what they would have done. But they were right. It got too long, they forgot about it a couple years later, pushed him out a window instead, and, you know, it's complicated. So, but no, that seemed to be what they were setting up with that, like, I have returned, that whole kind of thing.
So good.
But I believe this is the last time we see this gun here.
I say that to students all the time. I teach drama and film, but you know, a lot of my students are in AP history and stuff like that, you know, with their other teachers. And I'll be like, oh, what are you learning about in history? And then, you know, like, depending on what they tell me, like, I'll say a random, like, Lionel historical quote or something. And, you know, they'll be like, oh, we learned about General MacArthur. And I'll be like, did you know what General MacArthur said when he stormed the Philippines? And they're like, no, I have returned.
There you go. Smallville, man, it's a lot of knowledge in Smallville. So
it's an educational show.
So, you know, one of them, the thing is, one, you have to kill the other one to survive, otherwise you both die, right? The classic death trap, right? This is the final one. Meanwhile, Clark and Lex go into this building that Chloe sent them to, but it's abandoned except for this TV set that says Game Over on it. So they pull the cover off and they see Martha and Lionel in the elevator. But then before we see or hear anything there, we come back to them, have this whole conversation. It's weird because they play it like Lionel's gonna kill her. He's like, look, only one of us could come out of this, so you'll have to forgive me. I'm like, wow, like, you know, you don't know, because you don't know at this point what he's gonna do.
You really
so
don't.
I like that.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh god, she thinks he's gonna kill her too. But then he gives her the gun. He's like, look, you gotta kill me. Clark needs you. He's a very special boy. All that stuff. So we both know that he's gonna need you. So she can't bring herself to do it, which is, you know, Martha. Martha.
Of course.
The Martha here. That. She's not going to do that. Maybe the season 9 Red Queen Martha would have killed Lionel. We'll get into that. But then Lionel's like, all right, well, here I go. I'll have to do it myself. So this is the second time in the show Lionel has tried to kill himself with a gun.
Yes. And, yes. I was thinking that
And it's not loaded. And Clark implies at the end that maybe Lionel knew it wasn't. Clark is just very suspicious of Lionel. He didn't know. There's no way Lionel didn't know that was loaded.
So I was going to ask you, that was one of the big questions I was going to ask you. So you think there's absolutely no way that he knew?
Well, I mean, you know, you pick up a gun, you should be able to tell.
You shouldn't be able, right?
No, you should, right? You should be able
you
to
should.
Tell.
I don't know anything about guns. Like, I don't know.
There is ambiguity here as well.
I think it was I think it was definitely intentional, right? Like that we would always speculate and not know.
Right. Right. Well, I like that, though. I like the ambiguity.
Here. Yeah. I mean, his reactions are so genuine with Martha that I want to lean towards the side of like that he genuinely was ready to take his life, because he really does seem like very, very real, and he doesn't seem like he's being fake.
Yeah, he's like, there's good in you, Martha. This world needs you. I'm like, oh, wow, this is, you know, another genuine moment.
Yeah, it does seem very legit. But I will say,
I don't think Lionel is as good as an actor as John Glover.
So. Exactly. And I will say when Clark says that accusation at the end about, or maybe you just knew it wasn't loaded, Lionel does give him that little Lionel smirk for a second.
Yeah, he's smiling a lot in that last scene. So maybe you're right. There are, but that's what we love about him, the ambiguity. So. But then he can't do it because there's no bullets. So they're both like, oh, well, we're screwed out. But then we cut back to Lex and Clark, and they've been able to hear and see this whole thing. And I think it was cool that you didn't know they could hear and see. Well, you know they could see it, but you didn't know if they could hear it. And I like how you knew they could hear it. And Lex hears Lionel call, you know, Clark a special boy, and he kind of looks at Clark, and Clark just kind of glances at him.
So good.
Just kind of ignores him. It's so good. But then after they can't pull the trigger, Jigsaw comes out in the flesh. And, Lionel was like, neither of us was ever going to walk out of this alive. He's like, you're the master manipulator, right? You should know. But thankfully, Chloe is able to find the signal again and finds it back to the source and calls Clark and tells him. And Clark kind of looks over at Lex and he's like with the security team. I liked earlier when Clark was going to barge in and Lex was like, you want to wait for the security team? Well, Clark says no. And Lex is like, me neither.
He just
kicks in the door. Like,
that was such a cute little like bromance moment. Like, that was such I love that.
There are hints here where you're like, oh, Clark and Lex, like this could be season two, you know?
That was great. I love that. That was it was such a kind of like cool little bit of foreshadowing that the two of them were kind of working together again for the common cause. They're trying to save their parents, and they had their little buddy moments like that, and so there was that common ground with the two of them. And then it's Lionel's special boy comment that drives the wedge again.
Right.
So that was kind of a cool little bit of like just foreshadowing for the rest of their relationship.
Yeah. But the lesson we thought Clark learned earlier was not learned, because he's like, well, I'm just going to super speed off anyway. And so he super speeds off to a cross town, wherever this is. And Jigsaw takes off his mask, and it's the security guard from earlier. What a twist.
I just kept thinking it would be really funny if Lionel still didn't recognize him.
that reminds me, in way back in season one, it's in Shimmer, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The girl's brother who has the invisibility gel from the kryptonite.
Yes.
Lex is like, Jeff? And he's like, I'm surprised you even remembered my name. That's great. So... But yes, it's the guy's kind of a Trevor, right? Because they introduced him in this episode, but we saw him earlier. I think it was subtle enough. They had to at least establish
someone,
this person.
If it wasn't going to be Sheriff Ethan, I guess.
Oh, I love that, though. I love that idea that it'd be Ethan, though, right? So he's going to kill him anyway, right? And Lionel's like, Lionel kind of breaks down. He's like, I'm sorry. Let her go. I'm sorry. And after he says, I'm sorry,
it occurred to me,
I wanted to hear.
Is this the first time he's ever, maybe the only time? No. He's said it before. I was going to say, is this the only time Lionel's ever said, I'm sorry? But he did say it in Covenant, but I think that was just like BS to get Lex, you know, to let him out of prison. But is this the first time he said it and meant it?
I think so, because even in like Memoria, he couldn't bring himself to, Lex kind of stops him, right, from saying, for apologizing. He's like, if I would have, he's like, no, Dad, please. But yeah, this is like the first genuine, like, Lionel has finally been broken, I think, in this episode.
Yeah.
Mainly because Martha's going to die with him. I think he was prepared to die himself.
Yeah, and he's genuinely, like, crying. That was like, wow.
All right. Yeah, yeah, man. John Glover, man, A+, right?
So good.
But
it's a crime he didn't win an Emmy.
Right, he should have been nominated for something, right? You know, this is the stigma of the WB and the CW. But, I mean, I'm sure he's won a Tony Award, I think, right?
Oh, he's won Tony Awards, yeah.
So it
would be so cool to see him live, right? Like, to see him.
I would love to see, if they were in a play or something, I definitely want to make it a point to go, go and see him.
That'd
live.
Be incredible. But, really epic.
So Lincoln Cole, he says, that's all I wanted to hear. And then, boom, the elevator drops. And it's they went up really high in that elevator. because I guess he wanted to make sure it would kill someone if it fell to the ground. Clark is there just in the nick of time. He shows up. He sees the death traps downstairs. Then he x-rays. I mean, Clark is pretty smart here. He x-rays up. He sees the elevator dropping down. He super speeds over to where it goes. Bust through a wall, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
We don't see him do that enough. You know, we were talking about the George Reeves show. A little bit earlier, and that's what he used to do all the time. Like, Superman would show me bust through a wall. Like, it doesn't matter where they are, He's gonna bust through walls.
It's such a great moment when you see, it's such a Superman thing when you see that happen. It's really cool.
Exactly. Right? And then he super speeds on the elevator, and then it comes crashing down, and Clark catches it, and it's a cool moment because everybody like has eye contact with each other. Like Lionel's face is right in Clark's face because of the way this elevator is. It's just a great,
so good,
so well done.
That shot with the two of them is fantastic.
Now the physics of this are questionable because the reason Superman can do this, right? Like in Superman 2, right, where he stops the elevator.
Oh yeah,
right,
yeah.
That Lois is on and on the Eiffel Tower, right? He like goes in there and he like catches up to the speed and he slows down the momentum and he takes her off. Right?
Oh yeah, it's very but gentle. This is just
this is a dead stop because Clark can't fly yet, right? And so if physics were true to real life, that Martha Lyon would be dead.
They would just like go flat. They would just fall flat and. Right,
it's the terror. I mean, God, what a scarred for life, Clark, after seeing that. But Stephen DeKnight said this in the companion quote: "There are so many things that are physically impossible in the Superman world. I mean, it's just like him catching someone that falls out of a 5-story high window. I mean, that would smash them into nothing. Physically possible? No, but it looked damn good, didn't it?" And he's right. So
that's a great way to describe like the whole ethos of the show, like. You know, physically impossible, but looks damn good. Like, that sums it up so perfectly.
You gotta suspend your disbelief sometimes in these
That's shows. Why when my dad and mom and I would watch the show growing up, it's so funny because my dad would always look for these, like, logical holes in stuff like that. And I would just be like, we're watching a show about Superman. Like, why are you looking for that? Like, in this show? Like, that's not what we're here for. Like,
well, they try to be believable enough most of the time, right? So I think that it's a fine balance, but some things you're going to accept because it's a superhero show,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, but this whole moment here where, you know, Clark, like, it's just every display of his powers. Then he just rips open the elevator. His mom comes out and they hug. And then Lionel just kind of, like, is, like, in a daze. And he's like, that was miraculous. Thank you. Son.
No.
And I love how he calls him son. And I love how Clark has a problem with it at the end. But he just kind of wanders off. And, you know, it's a kind of a bizarre, but it's a bizarre moment, right? And I think it's all played very well. And I think it's very true to all where these characters are. Because Clark just look at him like, man, where do we go from here?
Yeah, totally.
It's a really
great
moment. It's like, you would never expect this to be the way that Lionel finds out Clark's secret.
Totally.
At least confirms it. But here we are.
Yeah, that was such a great moment. It was... And I love that he still gets that little sun thing in there.
Before,
and then which of course, that's the other question I always wonder about. Is like when he keeps doing this, the sun thing to Clark, is that him, you know, back in the day on Krypton site, right? It was always the speculation
Jor-El
about
Jor-El,
Lionel, all this. And then,
Lionel, yeah.
So is that residual Jor-El or is it just Lionel being Lionel and like more metaphorically being like, I'm going to make myself your father figure. Like, what do you look
I mean,
looking
I think
back?
That's just the way Lionel talks. I think that's all Lionel. I'm listening to Jor-El. Like, son.
I think so, too.
And then especially after Clark tells him not to do it, he's totally going to do it more. But, so let me get a wrap-up scene with Clark and Martha at the farm. And it's a short scene, but you know, it establishes that they're in a tough spot, right? Because like Lionel knows a secret, and Martha's like, no, he was willing to die to protect me, and... Clark's like, well, I still don't trust him. He doesn't do anything without himself. It's his best interest. And Clark's very suspicious here. And usually I'm like, Superman should be optimistic. But hey, it's young Superman here. And I agree that he should be suspicious of what's going on with Lionel. Because there's a lot that's going on that they're not sure about. So I think it's a good balance here. And you needed a scene like this where they're like, hey, look, he knows. What are we going to do? Like, we kind of have to go with it because, you know, he knows your secret now.
And it's a good balance that, like, Clark is kind of, like, as a young Superman, that he's, like... He's, you know, just as all young people, and like he's kind of torn between like what his mom thinks and what his dad would have thought, right? Like,
yeah,
he,
exactly. Yeah, he's very Jonathan here.
Yeah, he's very Jonathan, and so like it's. I think that was kind of cool and consistent, and it was just looking at this episode really makes me think of the show as a whole, like how much mm-hmm. it ties in to the larger mythos of the show and stuff, and
yeah.
Looking at it as a whole. It also kind of is cool to think that like Clark goes on to be Superman and to 100% like believe in the best in people. And one of his examples of that someone can be totally evil and can actually change and can find redemption and be a good person is Lionel. is the primary villain of Smallville, pretty much. You know, like, I love that. It's really cool. Like, that later on, that's he looks at Lionel's sacrifice that way. So it's kind of like cool that it ties into the whole show.
And then, and then jumping way ahead, right? Even in, you know, Lionel's, you know, funeral scene, right? I love that little like ray of light that comes down, like to
the angelic.
I'm like, that kind of that confirms that he got his redemption, right? Just visually, like it's really good visual
stuff. I love that. That was beautiful.
And there is some back and forth on like Lionel, but like his arc on the show was really interesting to watch, and I think they really played it off. And even then, he completes the arc and he comes back in season 10, and he's like the most evil Lionel we've ever seen, and we love that. So they found a way to have your cake and eat it too. So good job. So then we have our final Lex Lionel scene of the episode, and Lionel's like just at the crime scene there. He finds the gun, which I think is, like I said, I think it's the gun from Finch.
It does look like it.
He picks it up. Like, there's a lot of attention played to that. So anyway, he finds it, and Lex comes in. He's like, Lincoln Cole, that's the name of the guy who did this. And they found him in a bar down the street. He was celebrating your demise. And Lionel is covering for Clark here, right? He's like, well, it's a good thing those emergency brakes stopped the fall. And Lex is like, yeah, because he turned them off. And Lionel's like, well, it makes you believe in miracles, son. So, you know, he's totally covering up for him here. Lex, of course, suspects Clark. He's like, well, you think Clark had anything to do with it? He's like, I was in a room with him 1 minute, and the next minute he's across town. And I guess Lex somehow knew that Clark was there. That was not established, but
I never thought about that.
What I really love in this scene is the lighting, because you have Lionel in the background from both shots, right? Lionel is in this white light, and then Lex is in the foreground with this red light. And I'm like, this shows you where the two characters are. The subtle visual storytelling. Smallville doesn't really get points for subtlety a lot, but here it's very effective, I thought.
One of the things that is so interesting was that, like, I think that in terms of like cinematography, that when Smallville is at like peak Smallville at its best, like this episode is, like, the cinematography is, it's interesting because like a lot of times the writing is not subtle, but it's okay because it's like, it fits the comic book kind of milieu that it's not, but like the cinematography, it can be very subtle and can be, and it's so genius at times and how evocative it can be like that. Like, that is just such a cool little way to be like, Lex is going down this path. Lionel is going down this path. And you see Lex in the foreground and Lionel in the background like that. It's just such a great moment. And even when he turns around and he's got like the half shadow on his face, it's so good.
So well done. James Marshall, man, one of the best directors on the show.
Oh, yeah.
So Lex does mention, he's like, I heard what you said about Clark, that he was a special boy, and Lionel, even though he's good Lionel now, he's still going to make a dig at Lex. He's like, yeah, what I meant was he's the kind of son a father can be proud of.
Oh, that
yeah,
moment
so
is
so good. Even good Lionel is driving Clark and Lex apart.
I think it's always really funny that like Lionel's trying to save Lex now. Like, that's his mission, is to try to save
Lex. He's making it so much worse.
But he's just, he's just like, him trying to save him is almost like just as bad as him, whatever he would do. That's what I always find really funny and interesting about the whole reckoning scene with him and Jonathan too, is like the fact, you know, how this is revealed that Lionel's actually like on their side, like he's going to be a Clark ally. But like the way that he spoke to Jonathan was so sinister and just like creepy. But it's funny to think that maybe he was trying to help, but that's the only way Lionel knows how to do it, is just to be like sinister and creepy and to be an a-hole to everyone, you know?
Yeah, I think that, I think you said before when we did our top 10, right? It's like he's going about it in his Lionel way, right? of helping them.
Exactly.
But I mean, and again, on brand for the character, right? I mean, of course they were playing it vague because they didn't want you to know what's going on as the audience, but I think it tracks well enough. I will go with it there, right? But, you know, Lionel says at the end of this conversation, he's like, all these years still obsessed over Clark. He's just a simple farm boy. Let it go, son.
Let it go.
Then our last scene in the episode is Clark come to see Lionel. And I love this. Again, the direction here is great. We see the reflection of Lionel in the window he's looking out of. And you see the elevator or the door open. Clark comes in to it. It's a very, you know, it's very Superman and Luthor kind of scene.
Totally.
Right? Because that's what you get here, because it's Lex. No one is Lex Luthor yet. Lionel was kind of the Lex Luthor of the show. I love it when Clark can just be assertive. Because so often he's like, or trying to protect his secret, right? And he just goes up to Lionel, and, you know, they have some exposition. He's like, so how long have you known? And he's like, ever since I held the crystal that created your fortress of solitude. And, you know,
that was great. My favorite little John Glover delivery, too, is when Clark says that about, you know, when you were in the coma or whatever. And then Lionel's like, coma? I prefer to think of it as a state of contemplative repose.
So absurd good. Thing to say. But it's very on brand for the character. And yeah, I mean, Clark just, he basically says, you stay away from my mother or the gloves will come off, secret or no secret. I'm like, man, Clark.
So
man,
good.
Sticking up for his mom. But it's such a tense scene because, you know, Lionel's like, I hope you come to see that I'm your ally. And, you know, and he's like, I'm not trying to replace your father, because he says, he calls him son again. Son. And Clark says, you don't get to call me that, right? And that's true, though, right? That's a real thing in life. Like, if people call you son and they're not your parent, you know, it can get under your skin for various reasons, various situations.
And if your dad just literally died, like, that's so, that's so, like.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, he is just twisting the knife, right? But yeah, I mean, that I like how he's like, no, you don't get to call me that. So, I'm not your son, right? Go claim your own kid or you screwed up. Don't claim me. But Lionel has this, like, smirk on his face the whole time, like, Yeah. And that's when Clark accuses him of the gun and all these things, and Lionel is not fazed at all, right? It's like he knows he has the power here.
But it's interesting when Clark leaves, and Lionel has that look of, like, what, like, how did you read that? Was that a look of, like, regret, or what did
you? Well, I thought it was, like, oh, man, right? But it was that headache coming on again, right? The Kryptonian headaches he's been having, as we find out, like, he scribbles, you know, these Zod is coming. Right?
So it's really just connected to that, right? It's not.
I think it's connected to that. I thought had the episode ended like
right before,
30 seconds before, it would have been like, oh, maybe he does. Like he puts on a strong front for Clark, but he's conflicted inside. But there's just enough here to kind of tease what's coming. And it does tie into him being activated out of the crystal. No one knows what that did to him. He's been possessed by Jor-El. I mean, come on. But then, yeah, Lionel has these headaches, which comes back, which again, subtly planted through the episode a couple times, right? And then you start scribbling, and we pan out from Luther Corp, and you're like, what is he scribbling? And
that
we
was
find
cool.
out later.
That was so, yeah, that was awesome.
You don't know what's going on, but that's a great tease.
That and was
no,
the...
No opera this time, though, man.
No, they needed that opera. That would have just made it complete. That was one of my only complaints about Descent, too, was I was like, dude, when Lex kills Lionel, they should have been opera playing, like... It's just not right. There's no opera.
Well, they should have used the gun from Vengeance too.
They should have used the gun from Vengeance, and they should have had the haven't you heard the conversation is over opera?
How many times did he say that in Suspect? Like 4 times. The conversation is over. And to tie it all together, Sheriff Ethan should have been the bad guy in this episode.
There we go. That's it all comes full circle.
I've been expecting you, Kal-El. How long have you known?
From the moment I held in my hand the crystal that helped to form your fortress of solitude.
The one that put you in a coma.
Coma? I'd like to think of it as a state of contemplative repose.
You've known my secret for almost a year.
Yes.
Why haven't you done anything?
What? Expose you to the world? Some strange visitor from another planet? I've tried to tell you, I am not your enemy. To reveal your secret would change your destiny. And it would harm someone I care about very deeply.
You had a choice. To kill my mother or to kill yourself.
I could never harm your mother. There was no choice.
Yeah? Unless you knew the gun wasn't loaded.
You have no reason to believe anything I say, I realize that. But I hope eventually you will come to trust me. I only want what's best for you and your mother. Son.
You don't call me that. Jonathan Kent was my father.
I'm not trying to take his place.
You couldn't. My mother seems to think there may be some good in you. But I'm not so sure.
It takes time, Clark. Maybe you will be.
Or maybe you'll just show your true colors. Secret or no secret, you stay away from my mother. But you'll wish I never saved your life.
Mercy got an 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave a 3.5 out of 5. So, Roka, on the letter grade scale, I ask you, what would you give Mercy?
I would definitely give Mercy definitely an A. It's one of my favorite episodes of all of season 5. In fact, one of my favorites in the whole series, as I think you probably remember when I did the top 10 thing. I think I was torn between this and Tempest. Like that shows you how much I love this one, because Tempest is so incredible. So I think Mercy was just an amazing hour of television. It was just such a great showcase for Lionel, and just such a perfect way to transition his character from the ultimate bad guy into an ally, and to keep the ambiguity though of who the guy is, and how who he's always been, and to tie up some of those loose threads, like the parents, like did he kill his parents, what happened with Apex, what happened with, like you said, the Luther Corp of it all, like who's in charge? Why is Lionel back there? We still don't know about the office, but we're like, but why is he back? all these different things. It was really cool. And just like, so it was just such a different episode. The only thing, and it's fairly minor, it really doesn't matter at all to me, but like, I guess if I'm saying all of these amazing things about it, if it wasn't an A+, it would only be because that would be reserved for something that I would consider like basically just from top to bottom perfect, like Memoria, where with this there's been just a couple little things that we've joked about, like the jigsaw of it all, but like that really doesn't detract from it for me, because I feel like you said when it's a ripoff episode, this one did it really well, because even though we all know what it is, like the pop culture, I thought that it did it in such a cool way because they used it as a vehicle for characterization. To me, that's what just from a filmmaking perspective, when Tarantino does homages to films, and he, does stuff that's like really, really blatant, and he, an homage to this or to that, and he like just comes up front and says, oh yeah, this was like, this aspect was my nod to the Stanley Kubrick's The Killing, or like, whatever he's doing, like he uses it though to take his characters a step further and to have fun like paying respect to something he likes, but then to do it in his own way and take the characters to do something unique with his characters. And that's what I felt like they did really well, was they used it to show Lionel's character progression and his arc really, really perfectly. So it was a really great episode. I loved it.
And you don't think they did that with Pete in Fast and the Furious? Velocity. I don't understand. It's the same basic thing. I don't see the difference between these two episodes. Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you. I'm going to give this an A as well. It really is an excellent episode. It's not perfect from top to bottom, and I kind of reserve those A pluses to what I think are really the as you said, perfect, flawless episodes. It is a Saul ripoff. There's no way around that. But the fact that we're giving it such a high score shows you how well they executed that. There's a little fun things that we were joking about, as you said, throughout the episode. But man, what a great Lionel episode. This arguably might be his best episode, because it's like we said off the top, I think this is like the one episode where he's the protagonist, if there's any one episode of the show. Because usually, as you said, he comes in every scene or two, right? Does some nefarious things. We don't know what he's up to, but he's all the way through, start to finish. He's the guy. So a great showcase of his character, a great showcase of John Glover. An A for you. An A for me. Let's go to the tally board. They were all three right off the top. It's got a plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket, because Clark is wearing his Blue Shirt, Red Jacket this episode. That brings us to 36. We have a plus one for episode title set in episode, because No Mercy was the Hangman's solution earlier. That brings us to 38. Anyway, a plus one for movie plot as an episode. Of course, Saw.
It should be a plus five for that.
I mean, really, yeah. That if there's ever an episode that was going to get 2 points, it would have been that one. But that does bring us to 14 in that category. And the Bechdel test is a fail, because Lana is in one scene with Lex, and Chloe and Martha never interact in the episode. So there you have it. All right. Well, Roka, always a pleasure having you on the show. Where can people find you out there if they want to find you on the internet or some of your work?
Yeah. You can definitely find me on Facebook, Matthew Roka. You can find my most recent movie that I made on Amazon Prime, or on Amazon. It's called Bullets, Fangs, and Dinner at 8. That's the number 8. Good movie to watch since everyone's quarantined and in the mood for perhaps a good psychological weird B-movie thriller horror. And you can also find there's a new movie that I'm embarking on. It's actually a superhero movie, and it's a very different twist on the genre, I believe. It's called Neighborhood Watch. We're currently working on the website right now, so when the website is done and the trailer is done, I'll post a link to you, and if you feel like sharing it, you could share it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. We always love sharing each other's creative outlets here. As for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. We talk about movies, remakes, reboots, and when franchises get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. Right now, we're covering the Back of the Future trilogy, which is what I consider the greatest trilogy of all time. So check us out over there. As for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMalville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysMalville@gmail.com. Once again, with one S.
It was a blast to be on here, especially for one of my favorite episodes of all time. And so I was honored to talk Lionel with you. It was really fun.
Absolutely, man. You're the Lionel guy.
Thank you.
Son.
Son.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. But stay tuned next time when we talk about Fade. Until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Casey Cochran, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sacchi, Rachel Miller, Catherine Emmerich, Andrew Parker, James Lee, James Bandini II, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Will Hunt, Nathan Rotacher, Clunk Kent, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, Anthony Anderson, Joey Deinberg, and Fres Horshey. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.